Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shakya Presents Movie Night. My name is Rudy Obias, and joining me is...
Harry Nemiroff.
And this week is, it's kind of strange, the type of movies that we're getting at the end of August. It seems like these are movies that we should be getting at the beginning of October, in my opinion. The new film from a filmmaker, Guillermo del Toro, he didn't direct this film. He wrote it and he produced it. And this was made by filmmaker Troy Nixie. I believe this is his first film, and it is a remake of a 1973 TV teleplay, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. So, Perry Nemiroff, I know you love horror films. It's one of your favorite genres. Were you, in fact, afraid of the dark while watching this film?
I don't know about while watching this film, but yeah, when I was little, I might have had my issues. But even more than just loving the horror genre in general, I cannot get enough of horror movies that are fun, the type of horror movies that you enjoy to be afraid of. And this was the epitome of that for me. It's right up there with Insidious, and I can't even begin to tell you how thrilled and how much fun I had with this movie. Haunted House movies are 2 for 2 this year.
I'm not really in for horror films. I mean, I respect the genre, but every now and then I'll get a good one. I'm not going to love every horror film that comes out. This was a lot of fun. This was a very fun movie. It was very definitely scary. I was kind of bummed when I found out afterwards that it was rated R, because watching this film, I just thought kids are going to love this. You know, they're going to get really scared while watching it, and it's going to freak them out. So I don't think kids are going to be seeing this movie. The synopsis is, a little girl lives with her father, and his new girlfriend discovers creatures in their new home who want to claim her as her own. And coming from Guillermo del Toro, who has this great sense of tone and horror, he's really a horror hound. He loves the genre, and it shows on the screen. I do agree with you. This is kind of a perfect haunted house movie. When the film opens, it kind of felt like old gothic type of a haunted house, which really lends itself to the film. Yeah, one of the things that really drew me into the film was the opening sequence, if you remember that, the opening title sequence.
The title sequence? You mean the first, during the first scene of the film with the with Blackwood when he gets it?
After that, when they're in, showing the name of the movie and the director and all the opening credits, I thought that...
Yes.
Like this animation of children's teeth, apparently, the little goblins or demons in this film will have to be fed children's teeth. You know, and it's kind of like this weird take on the Tooth Fairy, which was very creepy, I felt.
I also loved the thought of, you know, when you misplace something and someone tells you, no, it couldn't have just walked away. This kind of alludes to that a bit. When things are missing, it kind of gives a really creepy reason for why it's gone.
Yeah, and it's like one of these movies where the kid in it played wonderfully by Bailey Madison, this very adorable little girl who's kind of caught in the middle of this haunted house and her parents. She's very good in this movie. She has this great curiosity about her, and then you're definitely on her side because you see what she sees. And it's also one of these situations where, you know, the adults in this movie don't know what's going on, and they don't believe the little girl, you know. And all you want to do is just, kind of shake Guy Pearce and say, your daughter's right. You got to get out of this house.
That's another reason why the opening scene of this film is just fantastic. I mean, talk about dramatic irony. You see this terrible thing happen in this basement, and then we cut to this, yes, absolutely adorable little girl walking straight into this nightmare, and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's frustrating that nobody believes her. And actually, that was one minor detail that I wasn't totally for, is that I think, as in most cases, they push that a bit too far, where it's so glaringly obvious that something's wrong, and, you know, mom and dad, well, actually just dad here, is like, no, 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 it's nothing real, it's all in her head, and it pushes you towards that grand finale, which is quite necessary, but that's one thing that might have been taken a bit too far.
Well, I think they play around with, I think they play around with the stuff, like what you were saying, that it might be all in her head, because they do introduce the fact that she is heavily medicated. That her mother puts her on meds so she'll stay. what am I trying to say? Like just to stay, you know, good, you know. And so they do add that element in. So at the start of the film, you kind of do think, well, maybe this is all in her head, you know, because
to be honest, I haven't even thought of that since seeing the movie until you just brought it up right now. And like even during the movie, I completely was not considering that.
Yeah, because it's a pretty big part of the film that when they actually show what kind of meds she's on. But obviously that kind of theorizing goes out the window when they actually show these little goblins or fairies, very creepy, like one inch, like evil smurfs. I guess is how to describe these things. I was actually surprised that they did show them. Like, I thought the whole movie they weren't going to show these things, but they ended up showing them, and they were pretty frightening.
That's definitely a big plus in this movie, too. And I attended the press day for this, and I remember Guillermo del Toro talking about the design of these creatures. And it was just all very specifically done to match some sort of folklore and just to show... to show what these creatures were like on a daily basis through their physical characteristics, like just how they're almost like rotten looking, which alludes to where they live, this dank, dirty basement. And it's just really smart design, really believable. I mean, one of the things that sticks in my head the most, which was overplayed incredibly in the commercials, is when she's crawling under her bed and this thing pops out at her. But then when I saw it in the movie, I knew it was coming, and it still made my heart skip a beat.
Yeah, me too. Like, it just... like it's like really in the camp, the goblin is like really staring at the camera and just like going rah, and it does make you jump. I saw this movie in a screening room with practically a full house of New York film critics, and people were scared during this movie, and it was during the day, and just how dark the theater was. It's a very frightening movie. I'm curious to see how well this movie's going to do. I honestly think this would play better in October than at the end of August. What do you think?
I don't know. Just because it doesn't have very much competition, and I guess we haven't really seen something of this nature in quite a while. I can't remember how much the Last Exorcism made. But that came out about the same time last year, and I feel like that did pretty well. I think it had long legs as opposed to maybe making a killing its first week out. But considering that, I'm leaning towards this doing pretty well. I wish I knew the numbers now.
I think you're right. I do remember The Last Exorcism did pretty well when it came out. It was definitely like a surprise that it did have legs.
I feel like it had to have opened with something like 20 million, because that would be, that sounds about right. And especially on such a small budget, which this might not be the same case.
Yeah, and with The Last Exorcism, you know, that movie did kind of come out of nowhere, and it did fill a need for like a good scary movie around that time. The movie made $67 million during its run, and the budget was $1.8 million, so it was a hit. It did come out at the end of August. Maybe this is going to be like a new trend, have the horror film come out at the end of August instead of in October, but it just doesn't feel right. You know, the purist in me wants to have the horror films come out during like the fall season, and I know everyone is afraid of Paranormal Activity, and so nothing is going to go up against that movie.
Yes, but the funny thing is that's not even coming out Halloween weekend. There's actually no horror movies being released Halloween weekend, I think.
Oh, when is that coming out?
Paranormal Activity is on the 21st of October.
Oh, Wow. So it's
the week before, so it's going to have an effect on whatever comes out the next week. But, you know, technically, horror-wise, October 28th is wide open.
Yeah. But I have a sneaking suspicion that they were afraid of Paranormal Activity instead of The Dark. And Paranormal Activity cost $12.5 million to make. You know, and it's a relatively small budget, but it looks great, actually. Like, the creature creation looks magnificent, and the house in this is very creepy. The set design and the production design and the art design of this film, it is great. That's definitely one reason to see this film, and the great performances from Katie Holmes and Guy Pearce, who I was actually surprised that he was in this movie, and this little girl, Bailey Madison, just absolutely wonderful. During that press day, was any of the cast there during the press day?
I actually spoke with Guy Pearce at Comic-Con, who was very nice to talk to. He does a fine job in this. I mean, to be honest, as much as I like him, his character was a little somewhat trivial because he's kind of, he doesn't have as strong of a relationship with his daughter in the movie as you would expect from a father-daughter relationship, which is appropriate, but it never builds to the point that I wanted it to. But he was fantastic to talk to and had only the best things to say about his experience making this. But here in New York, the press day, Katie Holmes was there, Guillermo del Toro was there, and Bailey Madison was there. And I had the wonderful opportunity to speak with Bailey Madison one-on-one. And it was a video interview that I posted on CinemaGlenn.com. And I'm almost embarrassed to direct you to it because this little girl is more poised and professional than I could ever be.
Oh, that's funny. At the age of 11.
11. She's just incredibly bright and really knows her stuff when it comes to shooting a film. It's the kind of kid where it's not like, you know, mom or the director points and tells her to do something. She's got this business in the palm of her hand.
Yeah, maybe we'll see a fine career from her in the future, hopefully. But she does definitely steal the show. She definitely has, like, this Alice in Wonderland turned on its head type of... This film definitely has that kind of sensibility. Like, there's actually a point in the movie during this dinner party where she's actually kind of dressed up like Alice in Alice in Wonderland, except she's wearing a red dress instead of a blue one.
When you picture that scene, too, it's almost like everything around her is big, like, enormous. Bigger than she is.
Oh yeah, I mean there's a scene where she's underneath a dinner table, you know, which kind of, you know, thinking about it, harkens back to like some sort of a mad tea party or something.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
So there's like these rumors that Troy Nixie really didn't direct this film. Like, I heard that he actually left the project pretty early on, and then Guillermo del Toro actually had to direct the film. Did you hear anything about this?
I heard about that. I mean, you know, who really knows except the guys themselves? I mean, I did find it a little strange that Troy Nixie was not at this press day. I don't know what he's doing. For all I know, he could be working on another movie. Who am I to point fingers? But, you know, I mean, Guillermo del Toro wrote this also, but he seemed very knowledgeable about how every piece to this puzzle came together.
Yeah, oh, as I'm sure he always would be. I mean, from what I know about Guillermo del Toro and this project, that this is really close to his heart, and he, you know, he wrote it and he produced it, and they're really selling the name of this movie on Guillermo del Toro instead of Katie Holmes or Guy Pearce or anything. So that's kind of interesting to me that they're selling this movie on a producer. And so while watching this film and then reading about that so-called rumor, I did kind of think, like, well, it kind of does feel like Guillermo del Toro. It does kind of feel like his sensibilities. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up directing this film and just not getting credit for it.
I'm not going to say I wouldn't be surprised by that. But I'm very hesitant to jump to conclusions like that and steal Troy Nixie's thunder when... I don't know. You just never know if he deserves that.
Yeah, I guess that's definitely fair. Yeah, so I guess overall, I think we're both recommending people see Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. I'm kind of bummed on the rated R of this. This should be PG-13. What are your thoughts on the rated R? Did you really think it was that warranted that this film was rated R?
I mean, in terms of rules and regulations, I could probably pick a few moments where, yes, it should be rated R. I'm not sure how much more money it would have made it if it was rated PG-13. I mean, the marketing of this film certainly says I'm seeking people 18 and up for this. It's not something, even with Bailey Madison at the helm, it's not, you know, it's not marketed towards younger people at all, as opposed to, you know, even something like Saw has kind of like a more young adult draw, even though those are rated R too, but I don't even see, you know, kids underage sneaking into this film, really. I mean, not to say that they wouldn't enjoy it if they did it, but, you know, I'm not telling you to do anything.
Yeah, but I do think kids would enjoy this movie, you know. I mean, at least 15, 14-year-old kids. I'm not saying take your 5-year-old to see Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. They'll have nightmares forever, but... you know, I think this is pretty harmless. It's a lot of fun, and I don't even think there's any blood in this movie. Everything is kind of just suggestive, but I guess I could see why it was rated R, but I was very disappointed with the rated R rating. That's not the only movie coming out this weekend. Also, Our Idiot Brother is coming out. I didn't get a chance to check this movie out before the recording of this. I'll probably check it out this weekend when it does come out officially. Perry, you saw this film. What are your thoughts on it? Is it just as funny and madcap as the trailer suggests?
I had an absolute blast with this film, but then again, there's also no denying that it's got some pretty major flaws, especially in terms of the structure of the script and focusing on Ned, which is the main character that Paul Rudd plays, which is what the title implies. He's the idiot brother. And then also trying to make the piece an ensemble film. The parts end up going together. They're fine just because the characters and the people playing them are so much fun. Tonally, flow-wise, I mean, it's got some issues, but all in all, it's, you know, 90 minutes of a highly enjoyable, somewhat absurd experience, and these characters are just a lot of fun. It's a family you want to spend time with. It might not be a family that you want to live with, but they're a good bunch, and it's enjoyable.
Yeah, this movie was kind of like one of the bigger films to come out of this year's Sundance. I remember hearing a lot of buzz about this film, and it was one of the first to get bought by the Weinstein Company, I believe, for distribution. And it's for me, why I would want to see this film, it's this all-star cast. We have Paul Rudd, Elizabeth Banks, Zooey Deschanel, Emily Mortimer, Steve Coogan. For Christ's sake, Steve Coogan is an amazing comic actor, and
don't get too excited about Steve Coogan in this.
Oh, is he barely in this movie?
He's his character. It's not his fault, but his character was one of the ones that worked the absolute least for me. And I guess this is more of a script fault than anything. It's just, you know, he's married to Emily Mortimer in this movie, and I mean, his character is just he's terrible. He's a terrible guy, and it's hard to understand why she would be with him, and we're not given enough background information on their relationship to accept that at all. That was just one part that I found really hard to digest.
Well, man, that's kind of a wasted thing when you have Steve Coogan in a movie. You know, that guy is a great, great actor. Rashada Jones and Adam Scott. Two very young, up-and-coming comic actors that, you know, both are on Parks and Recreation as well. So, I mean, for my money, I'm going to definitely check it out this weekend because just namely for this cast. And, you know, we'll see. Maybe next week I'll give my rundown on how I felt about Our Idiot Brother. All right, so two movies that are... that are worth seeing this weekend, and or maybe see The Help again, you know, or any of our listeners that haven't seen The Help yet, see that movie again. All right, so I guess let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night. Where can we find you online, Perry Nemiroff?
You can find me at Shockya.com, Movies.com, CinemaBlend.com, and ComingSoon.net. And you can also find me on Twitter. My handle's at P Nemiroff, PNEMIROFF.
And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shockya.com, autorcast.com, everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com. On the next episode of Movie Night, there are three movies that I would be interested in discussing, one of which I've seen and two of which I have not yet. So Apollo 18, Shark Night 3D, and Good Old Fashioned Orgy. I'll leave you to our listeners to guess which one of these three that I've seen. So most likely we'll talk about one or two of these movies in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening to our show. Goodbye.